The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us, a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein, and today is episode 43. It's titled, What Drives Home Prices? The inspiration for today's episode was a couple things. An email I got from Mark, who lives in Australia and is saving to buy a home. And in Australia, unlike in the United States, many lenders require more private mortgage insurance. And in Australia, it's called lender's mortgage insurance. But there, it's not actually lumped into the cost of the house and then as part of the mortgage. In other words, you can't borrow the amount or the premium you pay for mortgage insurance. There, you actually have to save that money separately, and it's basically an expense of purchasing a home that can be 2 to 3%, $5,000 to $10,000, or Australian dollars in this case. And so he's in a situation where he's saving, trying to decide, all right, they have about 10% saved for a down payment. Should they continue saving to where they have 20% and can avoid the lender's mortgage insurance, or should they go ahead and buy the home? And as a backdrop to this, Australia is in the midst of a housing boom. Australian home prices have doubled since the year 2000. And although they fell off a little bit with the overall drop in housing prices in the U.S. and in Europe, they actually rebounded. There were some incentives put in place by the government to encourage, I believe, first-time home buyers. And so houses have continued to appreciate to where Australia has one of the most expensive housing markets in the world in terms of its appreciation and relative to a number of metrics that I'm going to give later in this show. And that presents a conundrum to Mark. What do you do when housing prices continue to climb? They climbed year over year. Year over year, they climbed 9% in Australia. So continue to accelerate, and it seems like there is no end in sight. And so is it better to go ahead and take the plunge before the houses get more expensive? So that's something we'll address today. The other real impetus for today's show is I've been staying in Orange County for the past 3 weeks with my family. We are staying in a timeshare overlooking on the Newport Coast. We're overlooking the ocean. And back in episode 24, I gave the economics of timeshares and suggested why it's not necessarily the best idea today if you're thinking about buying one. Although after being here 3 weeks and just being amazed at values of homes, what homes cost. We're on a bluff overlooking the ocean. We're on about 1,000 square foot condo. If just across the way, there's this area called Pelican Hill, which is just across the road, same view of the ocean, houses selling for $7 million, $18 million, $10 million. You drop down and get closer to the coast in a town called Corona del Mar. There you see houses, same thing, priced at over $1,000 a square foot, which is 10 times what houses cost in Idaho. And so we want to look at, well, what is it that influences housing prices? And how can you tell if we're in a housing bubble or not? And what should houses appreciate over time? What should be our baseline expectation for housing prices, annual increase, and what is it that drives housing prices to go above that baseline trend or to fall below that trend? So that's what we want to cover today, just as a backdrop. The IMF does a global housing price index. And over the past year, houses across the world have gained 1.3%. But that really masks what's going on, because there's countries where houses are, as I mentioned, Australia, are up over 9%. The fastest increase in housing prices over the past year has been in Estonia, where they gained over 15% in the past year. The worst housing market in the world over the past year has been Ukraine, which you can expect with some of the conflict going on. Their housing prices have fallen about 30% over the past year. But what should be an expectation for housing prices? What you buy a house, let's say it's your first-time home. I remember our first home, we paid $70,000. This was back in 1993. It was a house that had had one owner. This was in Dayton, Ohio. And he lived there for 40 years. And I think he smoked every single day of those 40 years till he died, because on the walls in the house was literally, they were yellow with nicotine. They were plaster walls, which was really cool, really nice pattern. But I spent the entire summer just painting over and over those walls with kills, because the nicotine would come through. So you always remember your first house fondly. Now, that was one of 12 houses we've owned in our lifetime. So I've had experience buying houses. We didn't actually live in all those houses. We only lived in 9 of them. The house that we owned the longest was we built a house back in 2005, and we lived there 8 years, turned around and sold that house and lost $100,000 on it. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. We've owned, in the shortest period that we've owned a house, we once owned a house, and this was just a couple years ago, for 2 weeks. We bought it, we were moving in, and discovered mold in the basement, that because we pulled off some shelves and felt like the disclosures just weren't adequate. The homeowners were gracious. We did not have a legal case against them, given the rules in Idaho, but they agreed to buy back the house. They were honest and said, if we don't want it, we'll buy it back. So they bought it back. So we owned that house for 2 weeks. But let's go back to this baseline assumption. Here is a quote from Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller is a Nobel laureate. He is an expert on housing and home prices. Back in 2013, he did a series of 3 articles, which I'll link to in the show notes, or if you're a member of the Insider's Guide, you'll get that in your email. And so he did 3 articles on housing, and the series is called The Housing Haze, and just this whole concept of how do you know what home prices are going to do over the next year? So what drives home prices? Here's his quote. Real home prices should decline with time, except to the extent that households shell out some money and plow back some of their incomes into maintenance improvements because homes wear out and go out of style. There's this concept that when you buy a home, you can buy a new one, as we did when we built a house, you know, something brand new, or you could buy a used one. And we don't typically think of used homes because that gives somewhat of a negative connotation. But what Shiller is inferring here is that houses, like cars, depreciate. They go down in value over time because they get old. They fall apart. And just like a car. And we don't really think about that. But if you look at the 100 years, and this is from Shiller, the 100 years ended 1990 before the boom started in the U.S., home prices increased on average 0.2% per year. So real appreciation. So when we talk about real, we're talking about after adjusting for inflation. So after adjusting for inflation, the real price of homes should actually go down over time. They do get old, and they go out of style. Back in the 30s, houses tended to be smaller and have very small rooms, and then we've gone through. You can usually tell sort of the vintage of a house. Back in the 90s, at least in Idaho, everyone was building kitchen cabinets out of oak, and now you see oak cabinets, and they seem outdated. They go out of style. These mega mansions that were so common back in the first decade of the 2000s, there was an article in the Atlantic Monthly a couple years ago that talked about, will suburbs become the new slums? Because no one wants to live in these far-flung mega mansions. And so houses can go out of style. And that honestly should be our baseline assumption, that one should never buy a house with the anticipation that after adjusting for inflation, that it will increase in value, that it will have real appreciation. Stocks, you can assume that after inflation, they will show a real rate of return because the companies are reinvesting profits. They're coming up with new initiatives. Houses fall apart and they go out of style. And that should be the baseline assumption. Now, another reason why there's a downward trend in housing prices after adjusting for inflation is productivity. Productivity is the measure of how much output is created per unit of input. And by input, we're talking labor. So how much labor does it take to build a house? And how much capital does it take in terms of the material and the supply cost? And over time, builders get more efficient at building houses. There was a study that Schiller referred to, produced by Leo Grebler and David Blank. This was way back in 1956. And this was sort of the definitive study on home prices and what drove home prices. And they felt that over time, what drove home prices was the construction cost and this productivity aspect. And an example of productivity improvements, houses used to be built by hand with hand saws I guess they used to use chisels. But in 1889, the first electric drill was invented, and that certainly sped things up. And then in 1895, a portable electric drill. 1970, a refinement of the electric drill. Phillips head screwdriver in 1935, the first cordless electric drill in 1961. Then you have lithium ion batteries, you have nail guns, and the bottom line is building a home is much more efficient. I've seen that just since the housing bust in the United States. Builders seem to be much more efficient at building houses than they were back in 2005 when we built our house. Partly, I think, it was the environment, but construction cost, the actual material cost, have gone down. And I think they build them faster than they did because everyone wanted to build a house. They could take their time. They could charge you premiums. So productivity does put downward pressure on house prices over time. And it's another reason why that increasing productivity, there essentially you shouldn't go in expecting your house to appreciate greater than, well, after adjusting for inflation, you shouldn't expect it to appreciate at all. In fact, you lose money. You have to actually continue to maintain and put money into the house in terms of upkeep, in terms of maintenance, perhaps ultimately to remodel. Now, what examples do we have to show that this is actually true, that house prices do not appreciate after adjusting for inflation and maintenance cost? Well, there's a study, it's pretty fascinating data provided by The Economist magazine. And what they do is they show the real price of houses in different countries around the world. and shows what was their real appreciation. And again, I'll link to this in the show notes. I don't know how far the data go back, but I started sort of 1990. So 1990 is when the housing boom started in the U.S. And if you look at what houses have done on a real basis, they increased by 50% to their peak in 2005, 2006, and then they fell. And so since 1990, U.S. homes have not showed any real appreciation. After inflation, they haven't. Germany, homes never really got into that bubble, and so they are essentially priced after adjusting for inflation the same as they were in 1990. Japan, which has suffered deflation, has actually seen their home prices on a real basis fall by 50%. So they've definitely seen a price decline. But then you look at Australia and Canada, where, as I mentioned, Australia home prices have more than doubled, and Canadian home prices are also very elevated. And what's unique about those countries, unlike the U.S., because there's this idea that one thing that contributed to the home bubble in the U.S. is the fact that interest rates are tax deductible. I believe in Canada and Australia, mortgage interest is not tax deductible. And again, they're requiring higher down payments, 10 to 20%, yet you still see houses having appreciated significantly greater than inflation. But you saw the same thing in the Netherlands, where home prices increased 160%, but have since fallen 40%, but remain elevated. But if you bought at the top of the market in the Netherlands, you're underwater 40%. Let me pause here to share some words from this week's sponsors.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. With everything seeming to get more expensive these days, you need to find proven ways to cut cost and boost performance at the same time. And NetSuite can help with that. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/David. That's netsuite.com/David. netsuite.com/David. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. In my professional life, I've seen how important it is to have quality candidates to interview so we could find the right hire. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/David. That's linkedin.com/David to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So what is it that drives the baseline? Again, the baseline assumption, we should assume that house prices don't appreciate relative on a real basis. And we don't, you don't see that because the holding, you know, compared to a car, the holding life for a house is much longer. So it's hard to see these long-term trends. And there's this whole concept called money illusion, where you look at, we tend to look at things at, in nominal values. We don't look at it after adjusting for inflation. And so if your house goes up in value, well, most of it can be to inflation. But there are exceptions, and let's focus on Australia particularly, which is definitely in a housing boom. There are some locations where, you know, where there's a great deal of density in terms of individuals, households, it tends to be dense and highly desirable. Southern California, where home prices are selling along the coast for more than $1,000 a square foot. There, the value of the house is the land. There is only so much land with majestic views of the ocean and great weather. And so that land contributes a large percent to the value of the house. Now, land can be very, very volatile. And let me give you an example of that. Morgan Davis of the University of Wisconsin and Jonathan Heathcote from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, they have done studies showing, all right, what percent of a home's price is land? And it isn't very high. On average, it's been about 30%. So 30% of a home's value is the underlying land. 70% is the house itself. Now that it's currently, it's around 27%, but it got as high as 48% at the peak of the housing bubble in the U.S. in 2006. So you do have a situation where land can vary, and because land is volatile, that can get a period where house prices are above that, above the long-term trend. Now, housing is very, very local, and so, and I'm not that familiar with the situation in Australia, so there are areas highly desirable, like in Melbourne, Sydney, where most of the value is in the land. But in most places, land is only worth, is about a third of the home's cost. Most of the cost is in the materials in the house itself, which is getting old, falling apart, needs to be maintained, and potentially could go out of style. But what are other factors that contribute to houses going, rising above the trend? And I've looked at studies by economists, and we've tried to and look at what they think. Now, there's not general agreement, but here are some of the things. And there was a particular interesting study by Linda Rusova and Paul van den Noord. They're with the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And they did a house called Predicting Peaks and Troughs in Housing Prices. And they looked across the world, and they're trying to look at, you know, what is it that drives home prices to appreciate for long periods of time above that trend, to where they're growing much faster than inflation. They're showing real appreciation. And house prices show a momentum aspect to it. They're just like any other asset class, where there is a level of irrationality involved. I recall back in 2003, 2004, meeting with investors that were buying up property in San Diego, doing huge condo deals. And I remember one gentleman was just convinced this was going to go on forever. And that's the problem with bubbles. There's this concept that it will continue indefinitely. And there really is that belief when it comes to housing, because the trends can be so long. If you're living in Australia and home prices have generally increased in an upward trend above inflation, where you get real appreciation since 1990, it's hard to step back and say, you know, maybe this isn't sustainable. So what are the things that drive home prices so they grow faster than inflation? Well, this particular study showed that interest rates, so the lower the interest rates, that tends to be indicative that above trend growth, potentially leading to a peak. A pickup inflation, when it's higher, it doesn't necessarily lead to peaks in home prices, but inflation, if it starts to pick up, actually can be indicative of a trough. So you have a boom, And then you have a bust. So you have a peak and a trough. And one indication of a market bottom is when inflation starts to pick up again, is what they found in their study. The investment in housing, how much construction activity and construction investment. If there's a great deal of supply and investment coming on, that can actually propel the momentum of housing higher for a time until at some point the supply gets too much. Because ultimately what we're talking about here is supply and demand is what drives home prices. So when we're talking about above trend growth, it is because demand is increased dramatically. And that is driven to some extent by low interest rates. It's driven by low or eased lending standards. So it's easier to get a mortgage loan. That certainly helps. If unemployment rate is low and so incomes are high, that can drive home prices over time above trend growth. It can continue for a long time. And these are some things that they found in the study. And just like with momentum with stocks and asset classes, you find with home prices that as the rate of appreciation increases, there's definitely a momentum aspect to it. So where they go higher and higher and higher at a faster and faster rate until you hit a peak. And it's very, very difficult to figure out where those peaks are. But one way to look at it would be as interest rates start to go up, as unemployment starts to rise, as income starts to peak, and perhaps the increase in income, those things can indicate a peak is almost there. Now, what can we look at to say, is a housing market in a bubble? Well, there's some data, and again, you can go back to these charts on The Economist that I've referenced that actually show that. But the two fundamental measures to figure out, all right, are house prices cheap or are they expensive relative to the long-term trend, is price to income. What are the median home price relative to median household income? And on average in the United States, since 1982, the existing median home prices have sold for three times median household income. At the top of the market, at the peak, houses sold for 3.9 times the median, and at the trough, 2.7. So it didn't vary dramatically, but that can be significant. So 3.9 times median income, the median home price. And so when you look at, all right, which countries are most expensive on a price-to-income basis right now around the world, again, this is IMF data, Austria, Germany, Estonia, and Switzerland, most expensive on a price-to-income basis. The cheapest homes in the world right now on price-to-income are Hungary, Spain, Greece, Slovenia, and the Netherlands. Now, Australia isn't there, but it is very much elevated. If you look at the data of price-to-income for home prices in Australia, it is well above average, although not necessarily the most expensive in the world. Another measure then, so you need to look at this price to income. Where are we in terms of the long-term cycle? The other is price to rent. When you are buying a home, you have a choice to buy a house or you have a choice to rent. And so if the cost of servicing a mortgage or the price of houses gets prohibitive relative to rent, that can be indicative that houses are certainly overpriced and potentially will fall. On a price to the rent basis, the most expensive homes in the world right now are Turkey, Germany, Austria, and Canada. And the cheapest on a price to rent basis is Netherlands, Spain, Greece, and Ireland. So should you buy a house when it's overpriced? I mean, what is the likelihood of losing money? Well, just like with any asset class, when you purchase something when it's overvalued, there is a risk of loss. Now, perhaps that can continue for that gain for an extended period of time. And it is very hyper-local. You can buy a very well-priced house in an expensive market, particularly if you're willing to do, if it's a fixer-upper and there's things you want to, that you can do to actually increase its value over time. So don't get the idea is you should never purchase a home in a bubbly market. There's times where, for lifestyle reasons, you want to buy a home. Let's say access to certain schools or amenities, and there just isn't the rental housing available to do that. And if your holding period is going to be a long period of time, it can make sense to purchase a house in a bubbly market. But the bottom line is, one should never buy a house expecting it to appreciate more than the rate of inflation. And if you're buying it when price to income and price to rents are above average for your particular locality, there is the potential that you could suffer a loss. We definitely did when we purchased that house in Idaho. We had a house built new in 2005. I knew we were in a housing bubble. I mean, I was advising others that we were in a housing bubble, but here was our mistake. We built that house for less than $100 a square foot. And I thought, hey, we'll be fine because it's cheaper than other areas. We held it for 8 years, and just like things that get old, we sold it for about $80 a square foot. 20% loss. Houses depreciate over time. They don't keep pace on a real basis, that you don't see real appreciation. Your best hope is for them to keep pace with inflation, unless you buy at a trough when price to incomes are low, price to rent are low, and that would be a great time to buy. Next week, we'll continue this discussion on housing. It'll be episode 44, Should You Pay Off Your Mortgage? Show notes for this week's episode, episode 43, can be found at moneyfortherestofus.net. That's also where you can sign up for my insider's guide, and I'll email you those show notes weekly. That's also where I'm answering listener questions and providing other valuable content. On the Money for the Rest of Us Hub, just as an update, when I launched it a couple months ago, I said there would be 100 charter members. Those charter members would help me shape the hub, get their feedback. And I've continued to get that feedback. For example, I expanded my discussion on bonds and fixed income, particularly what I'm doing with my bond portfolio and what's driving those decisions. So that's at the Money for the Rest of Us Hub. Just an update to where we are in charter memberships. There's less than 25 left. When I get to 100, I will be raising the price of the hub. So if you'd like to become a charter member, you can do that at moneyfortherestofushub.com. Any questions on this episode, please email me, jd@jdavidstein.com. And everything I've shared with you in this episode is for general education only. I've not considered your specific risk profile. I've not provided investment advice. I've simply provided general education on money and the economy. Have a great week.